Good day, and welcome to the labor market starting Q3, breaking out or still sticky high unemployment conference call. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. Dr. Sinai, you may begin.
Good morning, everyone. Breaking out the labor market in July, we're still sticky high unemployment. It's more breaking out. The labor market report for July was unambiguously positive in all dimensions. Let me start with the flow of information that on a short run basis moves the fixed income market, because whatever happens or might happen to interest rates is a major ingredient into thinking about the equity markets and the US dollar. The wage inflation was up 0.4%. By the way, the headline number on jobs was a big number, 943,000, above consensus, which was about 850, and we were in the high sevens. The unemployment rate dropped sharply. You all saw that 0.5 percentage point drop consensus, and we were 5.7, so it was far better than consensus with good ingredients. Wage inflation, a key to the future of inflation through costs, rose 0.4%, and year over year, the average hourly earnings measure of wage inflation shows a 4% YOY rate of increase, up from 3.7% last month. So a slight acceleration, but still not as high as earlier this year where we were in the fives. A tighter labor market did show up in a slight acceleration in wage inflation in July. It's worth noting, along with the uniformly strong, not weak, not mixed, but strong labor market on jobs. That's the non-farm payroll company survey. On the unemployment rate, that's the household survey. And what went into the unemployment rate. The suggestion is the economy is entering the third quarter very strong after a 6.5% real growth rate in the second quarter, about a 13% growth rate for nominal GDP, very strong second quarter, entering the third quarter in a very strong fashion, particularly on what matters for consumption spending, which is 70% of the economy. The U.S. economy in the labor market, and by implication in the overall economy in July entering and going into August, was really cooking. Still, we would call it a boomlet, not a boom in the way we describe the life of a business cycle, but a boomlet, a boom-like pattern here fairly early in the U.S. expansion because of the reversal of what shut us down from the pandemic, that rebound, and also because of the responses to the pandemic, which would not have happened without the pandemic. Ultra-easy monetary policy, massively stimulated fiscal policy, and a much better mood for America, all adding up to the tremendous rebound we are seeing in the economy. It's extended what I called a boomlet, a very strong labor market, and a spike up in inflation, which on the major indices is running something like 5%, by admission by Chair Powell in his Q&A last week, the week before last, the week before this, in his Q&A, inflation running higher than they had thought and likely to come down only gradually, still transitory, the way he defines transitory, still transitory, but definitely much higher than thought. But Chair Powell also told us the Federal Reserve didn't care. And what is most important for the Federal Reserve is the kind of thing that data came out today, the labor market in July and how it's doing. Uniformly strong. On a short-run trading basis, it reads negative for fixed income. In it is a hint of higher wage costs and strong across-the-board economy, a big drop in the unemployment rate, and though we are not there yet, pointing toward the Federal Reserve with higher odds laying out in September this scenario for tapering, for less accommodation, for taking down purchases of U.S. treasuries and mortgage bonds, and then a tentative time when the federal funds rate will first be raised. We know that the Federal Reserve won't tell us much of anything before the meeting in September. We know that from the Q&A of the Chair Powell statement and Q&A on behalf of the committee, not this week, but last week, where he said discussion had gone on, but no decisions had been made about the exact nature of their scenario for tapering and for the next funds rate increase. That will happen in a subsequent meeting. By telling us that, Chair Powell effectively removed the Fed and any uncertainty about what the Fed might do on less accommodation at the Jackson Hole August 27 time of the speech of the chairman. In a market sense, particularly for the equity market, the Fed was removed for a couple of months as an issue, as an uncertainty. We know there will be no front-running of the committee by Chair Powell. He has never done that. He won't do that. We really know that there will be a decision and a path laid out in the next meeting in September, and that is underscored by the strength of the labor market today. And the slight acceleration in wage inflation. Jobs count of 943,000 coming after last month's 938,000. Upward revision, a drop in the unemployment rate to 5.4%. That's a huge decline of half a percentage point. Still a long, long way away from where the Federal Reserve wants to be. So we need not worry about the Federal Reserve getting nasty and mean. Indeed, on a worst-case scenario for the Fed at this point of federal funds rate increases next year, probably our scenario for the Federal Reserve would take us to 0.75 for the funds rate at the end of next year, and the long bond maybe at 2%. That doesn't scare me at all in terms of the earnings and the stock market. Even if that were the scenario, we'd still be bullish stocks. Well, this was a very, very strong report. 943,000 non-farm payroll jobs. 240,000 of them were in the government sector. But the government sector now, because of all the spending, is going to be a source of jobs creation. Most were in state and local. Most in state and local, not just education, but the kind of thing you see going on the highways, the construction. This is federal government money going to states, states spending the money, repairs on infrastructure going on because of all the fiscal stimulus that was put into place. So those jobs are going to continue. And then elsewhere we saw on the leisure and hospitality side another huge increase. That's the restaurants and the accommodations, hotels, 380,000. Increases everywhere except in retail trade, which saw a small downtick of 6,000 jobs. But so much buying online, I don't think we place much stock in the decline in retail jobs as an impediment to the economy. 95% of the sectors showing solid jobs growth, companies were hiring big time in July, and that likely will continue in August. The unemployment rate dropped sharply to 5.4% against consensus in ours, 5.7%. We had a nice drop expected, but this was a big decline. 5.4% is still a long, long ways away from the 3.5% full employment unemployment rate that we saw in February 2020. So there's still a long way to go. There's still a tremendous number of people to be hired. That the decline, as large as it was, still is part of a pattern for the unemployment rate of it being sticky high. 5.4% is still high given the way the economy is going. And so that's good news, but there's a long way to go. And the message of what I just said is the Fed is not going to be aggressive when it does begin to taper and talks about raising the federal funds rate. It's going to be tender, mild, minimal, not anything that would should scare a stock market that is clicking in with the stunning, the unbelievable earnings gains that we are seeing and will see and that I'll talk about in just a few minutes. The unemployment rate came down for good reasons. The labor force went up 261,000, not huge, but a good solid increase in workers coming out and looking for work. Over a million, 1,043,000 persons found work in July. Certainly a lot of that was the summer hiring that goes on, but not a million. That is a huge, solid increase in the number of people finding work. Takes down the army of unemployed by about the same number. Still quite a few unemployed that haven't come back to work. Nevertheless, the jobs represented and the work represented by this million-person increase and the earnings that will occur, the income, and then the spending, all suggest a forecast for real GDP Q3 for Decision Economics of 6 to 8%, a range of between 6 to 8%. That's real GDP growth in the third quarter. We're also expecting price inflation to be 4 to 5%, and that would give us a 10 to 15% rise in nominal GDP, an indicator of yet another strong quarter in the third quarter for company earnings that probably once again will beat expectations, whatever those expectations are, as indeed earnings have beat expectations hugely in the last three quarters. A good start to Q3 for the DE basic prospect, which we call expansion, then boom, 75% odds, expansion, then boom. The basic prospect, the strongest economy in decades. This year, real GDP growth with the current estimate for Q3 and Q4 of 4 or 5%, up in the 7% range, Q4 over Q4. Next year, up 4.5 to 5 year over year, way above trend growth. The year after, 3 to 3.5. The Federal Reserve and the consensus is not as strong as we are in terms of future growth. A notable difference, and certainly I need to point that out to you. For inflation and the DE basic prospect, the expansion then boom prospect, 75% odds. We're estimating this year 4.5% on the consumption deflator year over year, Q4 over Q4. We started, I think, with about 3 to 3.5. So we have moved up our estimate of inflation. That's high, far higher than the Fed's estimate, which is in the 3s at the current time. Next year, inflation on our growth forecast is forecasted at 3 to 3.5, and the year after 3.5. This increase of inflation, in Chairman Powell's way of defining it, is transitory. The inflation rate jumps up for us to near 4.5% this year, but does not accelerate, does not go to 5%, then 5.5%, then 6%, then 7%. If it did, and there is some risk of that, the biggest risk to this very positive outlook that we are presenting, an inflationary spiral, inflation gets out of hand. The Federal Reserve would change its path and pace of accommodation, move toward tightness, and the combination of the risk and actuality of accelerating inflation and rising interest rates, with more to come by the Federal Reserve, and the damage that would do in the economy would bring a full-fledged correction, probably 15%, in the stock market, because the risk of a recession would be lurking in this kind of scenario. A second risk is boom-bust, that the boomlet that I'm describing, the growth rate I gave you, far above potential growth, we estimate about 2.25% per year. We're well above that. Inflation is pulled through demand pull and some shortages to much higher than tolerable by the Fed. If the boom persists and inflation runs a good deal higher, even if it doesn't accelerate, it is likely that excesses would develop in the system, in the economy, and a boom would turn to a downturn, boom bust. Small odds on this risk right now, but an alternative macro risk scenario that we have to put on the screen to watch, along with the risk of accelerating inflation. Let me emphasize again that in the wage inflation today, we saw a slight acceleration in wage costs, but not serious, not worrisome, just to be noted. It was and is being noted in the bond market as it should, because it raises the risk that the Fed will be less accommodative than thought, more hawkish than thought, and markets do price that kind of risk. For the unemployment rate, down to 5.4% today, we revised down our estimate for end of year to 5%. We are expecting, particularly starting in September, larger increases in the labor force as some of the government support goes away, more people in a strong economy coming and looking for work, and the increases in the labor force, along with strong numbers of persons finding work, holding and keeping the unemployment rate on the high side. 5% is our estimate for December. That would come out in January, maybe as low as 4.8%. The unemployment rate, our expectation of it, has it higher than consensus and higher than the Federal Reserve. And it is based on a lot of things, a mismatch of the jobs that are available with the skills of the people that are looking, incentives to not work, but mainly the DE view that companies, in maximizing shareholder value, will do everything possible to keep wage costs down, including hiring, and use technology, which is available in an ample way, the new technology, disruptive technology, to replace labor as fast as possible to keep wage costs and compensation costs down, in turn profits up, in turn to maximize shareholder value. That's a long-standing theme and view, and it leads to a forecast of an unemployment rate that will probably be consistently above consensus. And finally, earnings, the fourth main dimension that I can comment on given the data today. The data today speak to a strong nominal GDP growth rate in the third quarter, 6 to 8% real, 4 to 6% inflation. It's 10 to 15% nominal GDP. Nominal GDP, and we're already almost in the middle of the third quarter, drives company nominal revenues, which drives company nominal earnings. So a forecast for us of a strong growth rate, not just in real GDP, but in nominal GDP, is essentially a big part of the forecast of the S&P 500 operating earnings that we run and track twice a day during earnings season to develop the fair value, the point fair value and fair value range that we give you in these calls and update actually twice a day during earnings season. Well, those earnings, the S&P 500 operating earnings, have been stunning, unbelievably strong. I don't think I have this morning's number yet, but I've got yesterday's PM result, 401 companies out of 500 reporting. And the track, the S&P 500 operating earnings track, that includes another 99 companies' estimates. They're more bottom-up analyst estimates for the missing numbers, is over 85% year-over-year rise, over 85%. Year-over-year rise in essentially EBIT, that is the earnings after-tax, operating earnings. This is the profits and earnings estimate that the stock market prices. Empirical evidence is overwhelming for that. Coming into the year, our estimate, our forecast, the earnings season year, was 75%. Consensus was 63%. So we had, and consensus had, a very big rebound year over year, of course, because the second quarter last year was the biggest decline in operating earnings of the whole year from the effects of the pandemic and shutting down. The actual result is smashing our estimate. It's 85% plus against 75%. And we were 12 percentage points above the consensus. Consensus blew this forecast of earnings and is busy catching up, still behind us. We are still above consensus. You need to know that for transparency purposes when I give you the numbers. If the stock market priced the consensus earnings, we would be 300, 350 points lower than we are now. So far, they're pricing our estimates of earnings, and I hope that keeps up for you, for us, for everybody. We have a good record on that, but nothing lasts forever. It's an unbelievable result, 85%. Now, we've got another 99 companies to go. At least 80% are reporting greater than expected. That 85% year-over-year is probably going to go to 90% year-over-year. That, of course, raises this year's operating earnings estimate because of the second quarter. We're not going to have a year-over-year number, anything like this in the third quarter. But on a 12%, 13% nominal GDP growing economy, I can't believe operating earnings are going to go down from the second quarter. They're going to go up. So we have operating earnings going up in the third quarter. Consensus does not. And that is what gives us, and this is fresh close of business today on our track, about $216 for the S&P 500 operating earnings average for 2021. I don't remember where we were a year ago, but it was probably $40 below this easily. But that's what it is now, $216. Now, we don't think the stock market is pricing $216 because on our empirical work, we define forward earnings at 12-month ahead earnings. That's what we find the S&P 500 prices at. And so next year, the estimate, the earnings estimate for an expanding economy, remember I told you it's 4.5% to 5% next year. We've got 3.5%, so that's about 8% nominal GDP growth. So we've got an increase to $241. That's about 11% increase in operating earnings, down from this year's 50% rebound. It's more than a rebound in operating earnings compared to last year, and last year was down 13%. How in the world did earnings bounce up? Certainly, it bounced up in reverse last year's 13% decline when we reopened. But it did a lot more than that. Something is going on in those earnings and the way companies are running the business and in the economy that is producing much better earnings results than the economy itself on a rebound would generate. Now, there are several candidates for this. Mine is technology and the role that technology, particularly disruptive and new technology, plays in this business cycle. Technology is used to displace workers. That saves costs. Technology is used to increase volume and shopping ability. That increases revenues. Technology is used to increase productivity of a company. That reduces unit labor costs, increases revenues per unit of labor. The technological innovations, the new technology, show up very strongly in the national income and product count data. That's where capital spending is occurring. It's cheap, and you see it, and we see it around us every day. We see it in new companies almost every day, disruptive companies. And our view is that will continue. That will continue. The technological innovation wave, in my view, the biggest ever, will continue. And it's part of keeping profit margins up, providing the surprising result in earnings that we have seen, and the incredible gains in the U.S. equity market. Repeated new highs that we have kept forecasting, and we're forecasting that today. On 12-month ahead earnings, which would be $230, because remember, we're 7 months into the year now, $230 at 20 times, that's the PE forward multiple we've been using. That's 4,600. If I go to 19 times, because interest rates will go up, maybe we'll go as low as 19 times, it's just under 4,400. If I price next year's earnings, if it turned out to be 241 at 20 times, that would not be a bad multiple on the interest rate picture that exists. That would be 4,800. The point fair value right today I offer is 4,550 to 4,600. The stock market overall is under that. And end of year, directionally, we'll be looking at 4,700 to 4,800, and on a continuing expansion next year, 5,000 is not out of sight. I'm astounded by these numbers, but I'm a machine that uses formulas and driven by science and data to the best that we can do. I don't think I thought I'd be talking about a stock market this high a year ago. I don't know. We'll have to look back and see. What's done it? Earnings, earnings, earnings. Hey, Alan, stupid, it's the earnings. I'll talk about me, not anybody else. It's the earnings, 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 earnings. And yes, it's also low interest rates. It's still a puzzle because of the rebound this year, now looking 50% over a year ago, last year down 13%, and the biggest depression ever. It did only last 2 months. In the business cycle, on National Bureau of Economic Research dating, the recovery is over. We have in the second quarter on real GDP surpassed the previous peak. We are in the 15th month of recovery. We've entered expansion, but expansions throughout post-World War II business cycles last 3 to 5 years. So I think we have all the ingredients of an expansion. We can't forecast a recession. Maybe there'll be risks for at least another 3 years. And so that's going to be an equity bull market, at least 2 of those 3 years. And how about the numbers that go with it? It'll be a price-earning multiple, which probably will decline times the earnings. It's the earnings, earnings, earnings. I will throw out that we wouldn't be seeing this, and this will really drive you crazy for this weekend. We wouldn't be seeing this if we didn't have the pandemic. The pandemic shut us down. Earnings collapsed. We reopened. We rebounded. The structure of the economy was changed. Workers were thrown out of work. Costs were way down. Companies are very good at letting those costs come back. In addition, something happened that would not have otherwise happened. The Federal Reserve got ultra-easy on monetary policy. Zero rates, quantitative easing, lending directly to the economy, a cheerleader for the stock market, and lagging inflation, changing how they approached inflation. Let it run, let it roll before taking action against it. Huge change of history that might not have happened except for the pandemic. What else happened because of the pandemic? Well, because of the pandemic, we had tremendous fiscal stimulus before Biden and now after Biden. It's now tally $6.5 trillion, and we're about to get another $3.5 trillion set of proposals which will not pass. But $6.5 trillion is enough. That is enough. The monetary and fiscal stimulus together, plus the revival of the economy, and the mood of America, which I would suggest is much better without Trump than with him. All of that is making me conclude that paradoxically, we're going to do better because of the pandemic, despite the tragedy of it, in the economy and in the stock market, than we would have done if it never had happened. Has anything like this ever happened in history? Yeah, the crash of 1987, where as a reaction, Chairman Greenspan cut interest rates way down. The power of lower interest rates in the economy overwhelmed the harm of the stock market crash, and we grew faster. This is an article I wrote back then and showed with our model. We grew faster because of the crash than we would have without the crash. Counterfactual. Things that happen that would not have happened because of events that happen that are unexpected. Isn't life filled with that? Well, end of the day on all of this is on financial markets. Bullish stocks, strong overvalue in equities. We are 80% plus in a open portfolio. We are underweight fixed income. Interest rates are headed up on average. It doesn't matter. This is a relative total return, and stocks will continue to far outperform fixed income. We still like venture capital. We still like private equity because of the vibrancy of business, which is going on now. And finally, interest rates low and the puzzle to 10-year yield. The 10-year yield surprised us. It is up today sharply, and on average, we are forecasting the 10-year yield to rise. That will be a bear market in bonds, and the stock market to continue to be a bull market in stocks at the same time as has happened in so many economic cycles. But that 10-year yield dropped to 1.12. Now it's, I think, about 1.30. Why? In our empirical research, we have found that a proprietary measure of expected inflation that we have used is running about a percentage point lower than the standard measures used by the Federal Reserve and by others in markets. That's the tip break-even inflation rate. That's the 5 to 10 year University of Michigan survey expected inflation rate. There's one other. They're all running higher. And in our bond market equation, expected inflation has a very big role. It's a very big determinant of the 10-year yield for obvious reasons, expected inflation. But it's expected far out because the 10-year duration is a long way out. Our measure differs from the other measure in that it takes a much longer time on our proprietary measure of expected inflation for expected inflation to tick up after there's been a rise in actual inflation. It does depend on the kind of rise in actual inflation occurs. But in a, I hope, simplified language, it's a probability distribution model. It's a waiting time model. It's a Pascal probability distribution model. It comes out of mathematical statistics and is applied in lots of ways. But it essentially works in the bond market like this. You initially get a move up in price inflation. The bond market, conditioned to years of what's happened, does not regard it initially as permanent. It regards it as transitory. It pays attention to it, but doesn't in its buying and selling bond decisions. Kind of ignores it. Time goes by, and the actual inflation rate stays up. And time goes by, and the actual inflation rate continues to stay up. More and more bond market participants, as they watch the actuality, begin to think that inflation is going to go up, stay up, maybe accelerate, and change their view of expected inflation. At some point, the mean lag, historically, we'll calculate for this time, is 6 quarters. It takes a year and a half. A whole bunch, after watching actual inflation stay high for a year, year and a half, then the bond market people call it permanent, and they immediately sell long bonds, and long bond yields spike up very sharply and stay up. Inflation spiked up recently. It's up about a quarter. The Federal Reserve is calling it transitory. The bond market participants, as we model it, this is proprietary to us, as we model expectations in the bond market, do not believe that it's permanent yet. If the inflation rate stays up and or accelerates, then as time goes by, a year, year and a quarter, then more and more bond market participants will believe that actual inflation is going to be permanently higher and sell bonds, and the bond yield will move up sharply. The bond yield today moves up sharply when expected inflation in the future moves up. It's that expected inflation that has to change, and then the bond market responds. On our measure right now, our measure of expected inflation is showing up a percentage point lower than the TIPS break-even measure of inflation. In making this substitution and using this measure of inflation expectations, we've explained away a lot of the error in the bond market 10-year forecast that we had. Not all of it, but a very big part of it. And we will be looking at it this way going forward, using our measure of expected inflation, watching the break-even measure, watching the comments of the Fed, watching the U of M 5 to 10-year survey. But empirically, the expected inflation algorithm I just described to you is the one that shows up best in testing in our 10-year equation for the U.S. Treasury bond yield. By the way, in that is a variable that does reflect the purchases by the Fed, and that 10-year yield does react in our model to a tapering down in the quantities. And of course, the 10-year yield reacts through arbitrage to whatever happens to the federal funds rate because of monetary policy. And it responds to the overall economy because of the demand for funds generally, the issues of supplies of funds that go out that are important to the bond market. And yes, it does reflect future deficits as well, but that is not a factor at this time, despite the prospect that the future deficits are going to be incredibly high. Happy to take any questions, comments through a lot at you today. But floor is open. Questions, comments, anything I talked about, didn't talk about, whatever. Hello?
For a question or comment, please press star, then one. There are no questions or comments.
Okay, don't hesitate to email me directly. It's all little letters, allen.sinai6@gmail.com. All little letters, allen.sinai6@gmail.com. I will respond fairly quickly to any question you have in case you're in a hurry or whatever, and I confused you or whatever, so you didn't feel like you want to ask a question here. Understand it. Don't hesitate. I'm going to repeat that. I guess I should have been doing this a long time ago. You can write to me at suchandsuch.com. Everybody else does it. Sorry about that. I'm slow on technology. It's all little letters, allen.sinai6@gmail.com. It's my personal email. I certainly will respond. I will appreciate the interest. Have a great weekend. It was a terrific labor market report. The economy is humming. The stock market is doing great. And let's enjoy it while it goes on. All the best.
This concludes the program. You may now disconnect.